Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Vicor earnings results for the first quarter ended March 31st, 2013 conference call, hosted by James Simms, CFO, and Dr. Patrizio Vinciarelli, CEO. My name is Sheila, and I'm your event coordinator. During the presentation, your lines will remain on listen only. If you require assistance at any time, please key star zero on your telephone, and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. I'd like to advise all parties this conference is being recorded for replay purposes. Now I'd like to hand over to James. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Sheila. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our conference call for the first quarter ended March 31st, 2013. I'm Jamie Simms, Chief Financial Officer, and with me here in Andover is Patrizio Vinciarelli, Chief Executive Officer, as well as Dick Nagel, our Chief Accounting Officer. Today, we issued a press release summarizing our financial results for the quarter. This press release is available on the investor page of our website, vicorpower.com. We have also filed a Form 8-K with the Securities and Exchange Commission in association with issuing this press release. I remind all of you today's conference call is being recorded and is the copyrighted property of Vicor Corporation. I also remind you various remarks we may make during this call may constitute forward-looking statements for purposes of the safe harbor provisions under the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Our forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially from those explicitly set forth or implied in our statements. Such risks and uncertainties are discussed in our most recent Forms 10-K and 10-Q filed with the SEC. Please note the information provided during this conference call is accurate only as of the date of the call. Vicor undertakes no obligation to update any of the statements made during this call, and you should not rely upon them after the conclusion of the call. A replay of the call will be available beginning at midnight tonight through May 10th, 2013. The replay dial-in number is 888-286-8010, and the listener passcode is 44260860. In addition, a webcast replay of the conference call will be available on the investor relations page of our website beginning shortly upon its conclusion. I'll start this evening's call with a review of our financial performance for the first quarter, and Patrizio will follow with his comments, after which we will take your questions. As was the case last quarter, we have chosen not to present non-GAAP pro forma financials that would require a non-GAAP pro forma presentation in our filings and an associated reconciliation to our GAAP financials. This is because we do not believe the fourth quarter non-cash charges, as described below, will be recurring. However, we do want to provide investors an apples-to-apples comparison of actual operating performance, and my comments today reflect this intent. As set forth in this afternoon's press release, Vicor reported an after-tax loss for the first quarter of just under $5 million, representing a net loss of $0.12 per share. First quarter reported net loss and EPS are very close to the net loss of $4.8 million or $0.12 reported for the fourth quarter of 2012, but the prior loss reflected certain year-end charges for inventory reserves and goodwill impairment totaling, on a pre-tax basis, approximately $3.4 million, a gain of approximately $2 million associated with the settlement of insurance litigation, and a write-off of deferred tax assets associated with state-level activity of $1.5 million, which was reflected in our fourth quarter provision for income taxes. As such, the first quarter's loss was much more related to operational inefficiencies brought about by much lower production activity and fewer shipments during the period, rather than the non-cash accounting charges that impacted fourth quarter results. Vicor's consolidated revenue for the first quarter of 2013 declined 16.8% sequentially to approximately $42 million from the $50.4 million recorded for the fourth quarter of 2012. The first quarter figure compares to revenue of $59.7 million for the first quarter of 2012, representing a year-over-year quarterly decline of 29.7%. The first quarter's revenue decline was expected, as we have stated in prior communications, given the prior quarter's sharp decline in bookings across all business units. The brick business unit, our largest, experienced a 12% sequential decline in revenue, while VI Chip, which has much greater customer concentration, experienced a 49% sequential decline. Turns revenue, meaning those orders booked and shipped within the quarter, increased to 47% for the first quarter, the highest level in recent memory, but we believe this reflects an increase in urgent orders postponed by customers during the fourth quarter. While, as stated, consolidated revenue declined 16.8%, our domestic shipments fell more than our international shipments on an absolute basis and relative basis, reflecting pronounced uncertainty in important industrial, transportation, and defense electronics markets during the fourth quarter. International revenue decreased 11.5% quarter to quarter and represented 54.1% of total revenue, an increase from 50.8% for the fourth quarter of 2012 and 53% for the first quarter of 2012. Keep in mind, for financial reporting purposes, we segregate customers by the address to which we ship. With the exception of Vicor Japan, all of our subsidiaries sell in U.S. dollars, and all of our products, again with the exception of those manufactured by Vicor Japan, are exported from the U.S. As our customer base shifts to domestically based OEMs that use offshore contract manufacturers, international bookings and shipments are increasing. Because such OEM orders typically are much larger and vary in frequency, the ratio of international activity to total activity will bounce around, as it has over recent quarters. However, as we implement our OEM strategy, over time we expect the ratio of international bookings or shipments to increase, even though the actual purchase orders are placed domestically. Asia-Pacific is the region with the most attractive growth, which is why we are investing in personnel and infrastructure in the region, particularly in China. Revenue from Asia-Pacific rose sequentially, as robust growth in China and Hong Kong was offset by declines elsewhere, notably Taiwan, where the majority of the contract manufacturers supporting the OEM customers of VI Chip are located. When both Japan and India are included in the definition of Asia-Pacific, revenue increased approximately 7.5%. European revenue declined 17% sequentially, but bright spots included Germany and Russia, which both showed growth in revenue and order flow. Recognized sell-through revenue for the quarter associated with shipments by our stocking distributors Future Electronics and DigiKey fell by 5.3%, representing our first quarterly decline, but reflected the overall weak demand of the fourth quarter. Recognized sell-through revenue totaled $945,000 for the first quarter, compared to $1 million for the fourth. Consolidated bookings increased 24% sequentially, but declined 5.3% year over year and remained below levels of the initial three quarters of 2012. During the first quarter of 2013, we received several large OEM orders, primarily for VI chip solutions, that had been expected in the fourth quarter. Domestic non-OEM bookings increased, but ordering activity continues to reflect the broad uncertainty in the U.S. economy, which was illustrated by yesterday's very disappointing March durable goods report. International orders, including the large OEM orders that will be shipped to Asian contract manufacturers, grew at a far faster pace than domestic bookings, reflecting in part the early traction of our new Chinese distribution partner, New Power, which has offices in Beijing, Nanjing, Shanghai, and Shenzhen, complementing our own expanded presence in Hong Kong and Shanghai. A promising rebound in certain European countries, notably the UK and Germany, contributed to the improved bookings for the quarter. Total backlog at the end of the first quarter was $37.9 million, compared to $31.4 million at the end of the fourth quarter. 73% of this backlog is scheduled for shipment in the current quarter. Reported consolidated gross margin was steady for the first quarter at 39.6%. compared to 39.9% for the fourth quarter, although the last quarter's figure reflected a $1.4 million charge to cost of goods sold associated with increased inventory reserves for VI chip. A more normalized gross margin would have been in the range of 42% for the fourth quarter. The current gross margin is heavily influenced by capacity and utilization pressures and not by pricing or mix considerations. Consolidated operating expenses, as reported for the first quarter, but excluding a $1.4 million charge for severance, declined $600,000 or sequentially 2.5%. This decline was driven by lower consumption of pre-production and prototype materials, reflecting the advanced stage of development of many of our new products, lower commissions, a result of lower revenue, and lower compensation, a result of the reduction in force. A broad range of other operating expenses declined, including travel and advertising. I should point out the decline in operating expenses would have been much greater, but for the accounting and legal fees associated with our annual audit that takes place during the end of the fourth quarter and into the first quarter, and our recent tender offers. We are focused on controlling our discretionary spending and continuing our efforts to identify opportunities to improve efficiencies and lower costs. Total headcount stood at 989 as of March 31st, compared to 1,046 as of December 31st. For the first quarter, our consolidated operating loss was $8.5 million, compared to the prior quarter's operating loss of $4.3 million. This quarter's figure included the aforementioned $1.4 million severance charge, while last quarter's figure included the $1.4 million inventory charge to cost of goods sold, the charge of approximately $2 million for the impairment of goodwill, and the offsetting $2 million gain from the settlement of insurance litigation. For the first quarter, we recorded an income tax benefit of $3.5 million based on a potential net operating loss carryback for federal income tax purposes and the recognition of the full federal research and development tax credit for 2012. Because Congress had not renewed the research and development tax credit by year-end, we incurred over $500,000 in additional taxes for the year. However, Congress did pass the American Taxpayer Relief Act on January 2nd, although because it occurred in 2013, we are recognizing the entire 2012 credit in the first quarter along with a portion of the 2013 credit. Cash flow from operations for the first quarter was a deficit of $1.6 million, reflecting the $5 million net loss and the non-cash deferred tax benefit of $2.3 million, offset by depreciation of $2.5 million, the $1.4 million severance accrued during the quarter, and a $1.5 million favorable swing in net working capital. Capital expenditures for the quarter declined to $1.2 million from the prior quarter's $2.6 million, truly reflecting maintenance activity. Based on our current production forecast, we do not anticipate increasing capital expenditures in the coming quarters beyond the recent range of maintenance expenditures. Cash declined by $13.2 million for the quarter, primarily due to the completion of the tender offer we initiated in November of last year, the cost of which was $10.4 million. We will be communicating tomorrow morning the final results of our more recent tender offer, which expired on Monday, April 22nd. As we stated in our press release of April 23rd, ComputerShare Trust Company, the depositary for the tender, gave us a preliminary count of 1,344,585 shares that potentially could be purchased. At a price of $5 per share, purchasing these shares would cost approximately $6.7 million, excluding fees and expenses. Turning to the consolidated balance sheet, our receivables portfolio remains in excellent shape, with day sales steady at 49 days. Consolidated inventories quarter to quarter was stable, with no additional reserves taken. Annualized inventory stood at 3.9, unchanged from the fourth quarter. As of March 31st, we had $71.4 million of cash and equivalents, down from the prior quarter's $84.6 million. We also hold long-term investment securities carried at an estimated fair value of $6.6 million. Included in this long-term total are auction rate securities with a par value of $6.1 million carried at a book value of $1.0 million, representing 82.5% of par. After the quarter ended, we received another small redemption of $100,000 at par. After the settlement of the tender offer tomorrow, we will have approximately $65 million of cash and equivalents. That concludes my prepared remarks regarding our financials, and now I'll turn the call over to Patrizio.
Thank you, Jamie. As you might infer from my remarks in this afternoon press release, I am balancing a concern regarding our performance over the remaining quarters of 2013 with enthusiasm for the implementation of our OEM strategy, which is based on exciting new products that are either already being sampled or will be introduced later this year. This strategy gives Vicor the opportunity to take meaningful market share in what appears may be an extended low-growth environment. Clearly, uncertainty continues to influence domestic demand for our products, particularly in our traditional markets. The sequestration appears to have had a chilling effect beyond defense electronics, with broader demand across industrial, instrumentation, and transportation segments yet to recover to level of late 2011 or early 2012. While fourth quarter bookings appear to be an anomaly caused by the chaos in Washington, confirmed by the bounce back in the first quarter, I do not yet see indicators of a broad, robust recovery or sustained demand. While there is a direct relationship between cuts in Pentagon's budget and reduced orders for our military-grade products, there is a less direct relationship between cuts in non-defense federal spending and state and municipal level spending and reduced orders for our traditional commercial-grade products. For example, reduced current budgets and lowered long-term commitments to infrastructure affect demand for transportation products that go into railway and construction applications. Similarly, the cuts to research and development, whether via government research labs, university labs, or funded private research, affect demand for products targeted at sophisticated instrumentation, which is an industry segment that remains U.S.-based. I could offer other examples in commercial aviation, robotics, and medical equipment, and most notably, supercomputers. Given the pervasive impact of government spending on the U.S. economy, I am concerned we may not see a recovery of our domestic business for several more quarters, or at least until Washington provides some evidence of a solution to the budget crisis. Our decision to shift to an OEM strategy serving major manufacturers in networking and computing segments, among other relatively new segments, is being validated by order flow and overall designing activity coming from those segments. These OEMs are globally, and much of their demand is non-US. Although we have experienced delays in anticipated order flow, we are confident the considerable effort we made to implement this strategy will be paying off. As Jamie stated, we received a number of seven-figure orders during the quarter that we had anticipated would be placed last year. These were both for Intel-based server applications as well as for supercomputing platforms. As Jamie indicated, the Asia-Pacific region is the primary focus for us, with new operations in Shanghai complementing our long-established presence in Hong Kong. Interestingly, our momentum to date across the region, notably in China, has been with our traditional brick modules. I like this because Vicor has penetrated these markets with legacy products of high reliability and superior performance, taking share from numerous indigenous vendors of commodity products in industrial and transportation segments. As we roll out our new solutions, our expanded infrastructure of sales personnel, field application engineers, and distribution partners should be able to accelerate this penetration, broadening it to include Chinese OEMs, as it is clear Vicor offers compelling differentiation in a highly commoditized marketplace. Turning to these new solutions, Vicor received a positive reception at the March APEC 2013 conference, at which I delivered an address formally introducing a new packaging technology, CHIP, which is an acronym for Converter Housed in Package. CHIP technology enables small and large converter products with functionalities ranging from the PFM, AC-DC conversion with power factor correction, the DCM, full DC-DC conversion, the BCM, isolated bus conversion, and the VTM, point-of-load current multiplication. CHIP technology represents the realization of our vision of panel-molded packaging, which substantially lowers the manufacturing cost of our modules, well below the cost of first-generation via chips. Acknowledging that, to be attractive to high-volume OEM customers, we had to provide differentiated performance at a compelling cost per watt figure of merit. We spent upwards of 2 years perfecting this packaging concept, and along the way refined unique components that enhance the performance of power conversion engines within chips. Our initiative is being acknowledged as a breakthrough means of allowing designers faster time to market for development of full power systems and of power management solutions leveraging a power component building block methodology. CHIPs offer unprecedented levels of performance in terms of power density and high efficiency, while providing a level of manufacturing cost effectiveness necessary for Vicor to succeed in cost-sensitive, high-volume applications. I'm pleased to report we have received our first purchase order for CHIP modules even before our first formal CHIP product introduction. For those listeners interested in learning more about CHIPs and our product offerings and roadmaps, please visit our website. So, on the one hand, I am cautious about the company's performance in the near term. Based on booking trends and market visibility, I do not believe Vicor will be profitable in the second quarter, although I do expect improvement over first quarter performance. Based on our expectations or requirements from server, supercomputer, and defense electronics projects in which we are already involved, we could receive significant orders this quarter. However, we also know that projects of this kind have been pushed out before, so it would not be unexpected to see further delays. On the other hand, I am hopeful improvements in our results will accelerate as innovative new products are introduced later this year. CHIP modules, in combination with Vicor SIPs and Vicor system-level products, fulfill our commitment to provide the most technologically advanced solution for power management from the AC source to the point of load. The market's reception of our new products and our near-term product roadmap has been encouraging, confirming our power component paradigm vision. But all these products are early in their design and sell cycles, and their uptake could be inhibited by prolonged economic uncertainty. Nevertheless, I know Vicor is on the correct path to long-term success, as we have the technology, the product roadmap, and the vision necessary to serve the needs of our targeted customers. We have redefined our go-to-market infrastructure, expanding our worldwide capabilities, and partnering with well-positioned distributors. Unfortunately, we continue to face strong economic headwinds, just as we are delivering on our new product commitments. This concludes management's prepared remarks, and we'll now take questions from listeners. Operator.
Sheila.
Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, the question and answer session will now begin. If you wish to ask a question, please key star, then one on your telephone. If you then decide to withdraw your question, you can simply key star two. All questions will be answered in the order received, and you'll be advised when to ask your question. All other lines remain on listen only. So just to remind you, if you wish to ask a question, please key star, then one on your telephone. Okay, the first question comes from the line of Ben Alexander. Please go ahead, Ben.
Yes, thank you. For somebody looking at your company for the first time, could you quantify in some fashion the opportunities that you see and what type of operating performance you might be able to achieve looking, let's say, out to 2014? What's going to drive that?
So what is going to drive long-term growth is the new product platforms that we've been talking about. These are new product platforms from the likes of our PyGold subsidiary, focusing on system in a package, power management and power conversion solutions, and the likes of chip products from our VIA chip division. These are products which in their own domains advance the state of the art with respect to key converter attributes, including density, efficiency, and overall performance, while at the same time providing a level of cost effectiveness that our classic products never achieved. That in and of itself should lay a rational foundation for a growth opportunity, even in an adverse, relatively slow growth environment, as we might generally experience in the next several years. Does that answer your question?
Well, it does. It is helpful, but I know it's you know, the environment is uncertain, and you're feeling the impact of you know, U.S. government reining in their spending and so forth. But if we assume the environment is going to remain pretty much the same, very muddled through, and you know, with government cutbacks and things of that nature, what type of upside or long-term profitability do you think, you know, is possible or likely looking out a little longer term when your products might gain some traction in the marketplace?
Well, I think in general I suggested in earlier conference calls and annual meetings, we have high expectations because with our products, we address a very large market opportunity that is literally thirsty for solutions with the requisite attributes of density, efficiency, and cost effectiveness. And we believe that making products with these attributes available into our marketplace will bring about a change from solutions that historically have been handicapped by, you know, a custom nature, custom developments, which are inherently not scalable, to, you know, the vision that we have been pursuing of a building block-based methodology, Lego blocks, if you will, for power systems. So you can infer from that the growth opportunity is very substantial. Obviously, Vicor is very little penetrated in a very large market. The market in and of itself is large enough not to represent a practical limit with respect to growth. Our ability to grow is going to be very much dependent on execution with respect to key objectives of achieving a complete portfolio of products that is critical in terms of advancing complete solutions from the wall plug to the point of load, as well as delivering those products with the requisite cost effectiveness. But with those elements in place, the growth opportunity is, I believe, very, very large.
So does the company have in mind like an operating model? And what I mean by that is,
We do, but that's not one that we want to quantify in detail here, and that could be you know, risky as you can imagine for a number of reasons. I think it's fair to say that we've had disappointments in recent years regarding earlier projections, and these disappointments were to a large degree brought about by events beyond our control, you know, ranging from large cancellations of supercomputing products to severe cutbacks in the defense market. And that's an indication of how precarious the operating environment is. So sticking our neck out with any kind of detailed prediction of top line and bottom line performance into a time frame, as you suggested, 2014, would be a very risky position that we're not prepared to take. But the range of outcomes is obviously relatively wide, and I believe, again, that there is a great deal of upside.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next question comes from the line of Jim Bartlett. Please go ahead. Your line's now open.
When you mentioned the potential significant orders in the second quarter, could you, what area are those orders?
In some of the new markets that we had targeted and about which we told you about in earlier conference calls, so in computing and potentially supercomputing applications, as well as communications applications.
But these are this is not related to the new chip product line. Is that correct? Is that too?
We expect to start shipping chip products later this year. And we already have a lot of design activity for these products in these same end markets and other markets. So, but not anything of significance in terms of bookings for chip products this quarter, even though I mentioned in our prepared remarks that we actually began to get some actual purchase order for these products. But there is a lot of activity already because we've been, even though there hasn't been a formal product announcement, we only had an introduction of the chip technology platform as a packaging platform at EPEC about a month ago. We have been sharing with some key customers some of the product opportunities, and there is a good deal of interest with respect to these products and the kind of performance they enable in certain applications with OEMs in the targeted markets.
But the design in time on that was probably similar to past experiences, like 12, 18 months, 2 years?
Yeah, there is no instant gratification with respect to to OEM products of the kind we make. I think, to your point, a reasonable expectation for the beginning of a significant contribution from chip products would be 2014.
In late 2014?
No, I think we're going to see some action starting at the end of 2013, but that in and of itself is not going to be, assuming that it comes in without delays, which is always a necessary caveat, right? But even if it were to happen on time because the customer program is on target, it will not be all that substantial in 2013, but as we get into 2014, that there are other programs and more activity involving a variety of chips. And so the statistical base gets to be more relevant, and I think it's reasonable to expect we're going to see significant contributions next year. Likewise, there's been already some significant level of activity for PIGO SIPs, and some of these initiatives may turn into a contribution to top line in 2014.
When we're looking at 2013, could you just give us an update on what the opportunities are for revenue increases from Future and DigiKey? Is the decline this quarter, but how you see that progressing, and then add on to that your new distribution partner in China, as well as what's happening in the IBC space, and the given the Syncor suit, and just give us an update on what's happening in that regard, given their latest actions.
That's more than a mouthful, but let me take it in small bites. So regarding your first question, I think, again, without getting quantitative, you know, we do expect progress through the balance of this year in terms of top line. Regarding the bottom line, our bottom line, as listeners know, is so dependent on the top line, given a fixed cost structure, that you know, ability to be profitable will very much depend on raising the revenue level to levels at least comparable to the levels of the earlier part of 2012. There's an opportunity for that as this year comes to a close, and we think there's an opportunity for considerably better than that as we get into 2014. Regarding the second part of your question with respect to the threats implicit and explicit in connection with the Syncor litigation, you know, Syncor has been aggressively asserting its patents against the so-called artisan defendants in a first litigation in Texas. And aggressively asserting pretty much the same patents against us and Cisco in a second litigation also brought in Texas. As you referenced, Syncor scored a victory in terms of being able to have the Federal Circuit uphold an award of damages in the Artisan case without changing any of the parameters of that award. They declared victory in that contest and issued a press release including statements that are, from our perspective, falsely characterizing their monopoly of so-called IBA. We believe that Syncor did not invent IBA. Syncor is not entitled to any IBA patent, and by that I mean the power distribution architecture that is become known as IBA. All that Syncor did back in 1997 is to invent and lay claim to ADC, to the DC converter, and through, you know, a long saga which has not yet come to an end, they managed posthumously to redefine that which they had invented into something other than what it is. Having done that in the patent office, they were successful in asserting these bogus claims against defendants that, from our perspective, were very ill-prepared and, you know, to put it bluntly, somewhat inept at defending themselves. That will not be the case with us. And, in fact, so far, we've taken the initiative in the patent office with each and every single patent. And as of today, if this were a boxing match, it would be 5-0 against Syncor in that each and every one of their patents has been found to be not valid. All the claims asserted against us have been found by different examiners in the patent office as not having the requisite novelty to warrant patentability. In fact, what has happened in that contest is that it is Syncor that is now appealing the finding of the examiners, as opposed to what happened in the Artisan case, where the Artisan defendants were appealing a judgment against them. So it's going to be up to Syncor to try and undo the invalidation of their patents, which has been taking place. But beyond that, even if somehow these patents were to be found valid, they are not infringed by our products because our products are fundamentally different from the products in the Artisan case. Any person looking at a distance at these products and comparing them with one another can tell that they're fundamentally different in terms of technology. Syncor has, in order to get their patents issued in the patent office, specifically disclaimed that the class of converters that our products represent. So there's a long list of reasons why, number one, the patents are invalid to begin with. Number two, even if they were valid, they do not apply against our products. But that's not deterred Syncor, aggressive as they are, to make false claims, threaten customers with litigation in order to carry on their crusade, in order to collect, shake out money from competitors and customers, and we're patiently waiting to play all of this out to its bitter end in the patent office and in the courts.
And what has happened to your IBC orders? I know they're way down from what you expected, and last I heard that it sounded like you should be getting, you know, some at a low level, but some increasing orders in 2013. Is that still the case or not?
Syncor, through their threats, have at least up to this point succeeding in holding back the wave of interest that many customers had demonstrated for our products, and we're obviously holding them accountable for that. But I can say that we made progress in spite of that because sophisticated customers can tell that their claims are without a rational foundation and are attracted to our products because of their superiority, their higher density, their efficiency, their cost effectiveness. So in spite of all of the Syncor threats, we've been able to make progress and are continuing to make progress in that regard.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the next question comes from the line of John Dillon. Please go ahead. Your line's open.
Hi, Patrizio.
Hello. Hi, John.
Patrizio, first of all, thank you for that explanation of the lawsuit. That was incredibly helpful for me to hear you explain that in the detail that you did. Thank you. My question is on bookings. Bookings were up pretty substantially, and that's great. But I'm just wondering, in this current environment, macro environment, do you see that curve continuing to go up for bookings in the foreseeable future?
Well, I think acknowledging the headwinds and the applicability that comes with that, the short answer would be yes. So we do see progress as the year progresses. again, subject to potential upsets coming from a variety of fronts. But the expectation is that there is going to be bookings growth, sequential bookings growth, and sequential revenue growth as the year progresses.
Great.
And that
Good.
Ultimately that will result in a change in the sign of the bottom line.
Great. And with that, do you have any plans to bring back some of the workers that were furloughed, or have any been brought back?
None have been brought back, nor do we have any near-term plan to bring them back. You know, pragmatically looking at these kinds of decisions, difficult as they are and agonizing as they are because of all of the impact they have, it would be foolish to make such a decision in the first place with the intent of bringing people back in a near-time horizon. You know, we are practically having taken that decision, looking at doing the utmost in order to improve our productivity, reduce our cost structure, so as to improve the level of profitability we're going to be able to sustain, you know, once the top line improves.
Okay. And you've talked about the improvement in the communications market a number of times. I'm just wondering, can you give us a little bit more color on that? Because it sounds like that's a bright spot for you, even though you still have some hurdles because of the lawsuit.
So I think to some extent we talked about this. We had you know, significant challenges brought about by Syncore threats. Those threats have recently been renewed, and their false claims, particularly vis-a-vis our products, it caused damage to us. But again, the damage is to some degree limited by the appeal of the products and the fact that certain customers have learned how to deal with this kind of an issue and find the products compelling enough to want to use them or design them into new applications.
So do you see consistent growth in that market going forward?
We see growth in the communication space, and as I mentioned in past conference calls, we see growth in that space, not just for bus converters, but particularly for other Vicor products that have caught the attention of key OEMs in that space once they became better aware of our technological capabilities, which was made evident by the superiority of our bus converters. So as discussed in prior calls, you know, part of our strategic decision to enter the bus converter market with products that compete within the standard bricks, but do so with much more advanced technology, was not just to capture the market opportunity that was being created by Syncore's initial win against competitors, copycat competitors, but also significantly in order to make evident to key customers in that space that Vicor is uniquely equipped with much more advanced technology, which can be leveraged in realizing more advanced systems. So more and more, we are making inroads with these customers, not with IBA solutions or intermediate bus architecture solutions, but with other kinds of products, you know, ranging from you know, point of load car multipliers to AC to DC product opportunities.
Great, great. Question for Jamie, quick one for Jamie. Don McKenna asked a very interesting question last conference call, and it was basically to Patrizio about some of the stock options that the guys have, the new sales guys that were brought on. So, Jamie, I want to ask you a similar question. You know, the bulk of your stock options are $12 to $13 a share. What makes you hang around? Because obviously you're hanging around for more than the salary. So can you give us a little insight as to, you know, what motivates you to hang around, and what you see is going to drive Vicor, so you know you can profit from it.
Well, make sure you say that working for me, such a charming fellow.
I was going to point out Patricio's dark charisma. Look, I think we have a tremendous opportunity here. I'm not going to deny a certain level of disappointment that I share with the investors on this call. But I think, you know, to turn your question sort of inside out, I think you should take some degree of comfort that we do retain the employees, the leaders of the company, because we all have a shared vision with Patricio that this is a tremendous opportunity. Now, I've said before that when I arrived here 5 years ago, more than a few of the problems that we were facing were of our own design, whereas 5 years later, we're executing on what we can do internally. What we've had happen is we've run into the much-discussed macro issues. We've run into the challenges of transitioning our model, and we've run into the litigation, which inhibited progress in a very promising market. So I think that to the extent that you look to why I stick around, I think it's very clear that it's because of the long-term opportunity to really redefine, as Patricio called it, the power paradigm.
Great. Thank you very much, guys. Thank you.
So Jamie's going to stick around long after I'm gone.
I hope so. Thank you both.
Any other question?
Yeah, the next question comes from the line of Alan Hicks. Please go ahead. You're live in the call.
Yeah. Good afternoon. I had a question about the supercomputing market. I know you were a strong player there in the past. How does that look for you? And I imagine it's going to be lumpy, but do you have big opportunities like you've had in the past there?
Yeah, we do. And I think what's heartening with respect to that is that new opportunities are coming about from new major players in that market. So as you might know, our initial penetration was very much focused on one major player, not the largest. I think of late we've seen significant progress elsewhere. And this is really driven by the compelling nature of our solutions, the fact that more and more in that space, given competitive challenges, key OEMs are driven to want to leverage the best power technology in order to make their products more competitive. So this is a case where you know, the current difficult environment is catalyzing a new thought process on several fronts, including with companies that historically were really changed to a commoditized you know, power methodology. So they're thinking out of the box. They see that there is a value proposition. I've been recently on trips that have been very encouraging in terms of new opportunities.
Okay, so you'd say you have a lot of new opportunities, but it's just hasn't come together yet.
I think these are new designing activities. So the same comments apply. As earlier made with respect to time to fruition, I think the first one of these opportunities will probably be a 2014 event.
And also on the new packaging technology, has that begun to ship already?
We sampled it to a number of customers, but there's been no production shipments yet. There's been no formal product introduction yet, but I suggested earlier a number of these new opportunities have to do with chip products.
Okay, so that's more second half of the year.
Well, the first one scheduled to go into production is in the second half of the year, with more opportunities, more designing activity in 2014.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of John Dillon. Please go ahead. You're live in the call.
Just a quick one, guys. Patrizia, with the new packaging technology, do you guys truly have a cost card that's competitive with other power supply technologies? And then on top of that, you have all your benefits on top of it?
Yeah, so it's game changer in terms of the cost effectiveness of the platform. It's also a game changer with respect to scalability. And what I mean by that is that unlike our first generation VA chips made in dedicated cavities, so that in effect a new product line would require a new cavity and significant tooling to support that new product outline. The soul of the panel molded technology platform, which we have marketed and branded as chip technology, is that it's inherently highly scalable, because what is fundamentally manufactured is not a device, but an array of devices. And so throughout the manufacturing process, what is being made is not, in effect, a single chip, but an array of chip. And that array of chip can comprise anywhere from relatively few to as many as approximately 100 of them in one panel. So this is for power and power components, what, if you will, a wafer methodology is for silicon chips, in that,
wow,
as with wafers, you can have, in effect, a general platform, silicon platform, that within a certain wafer geometry, depending on the chip size, can provide a larger or smaller number of devices. And that's highly scalable in that you can, without significant incremental tooling costs, accommodate application requirements for larger or smaller chips. Well, that same methodology applies with our chip, as in capital C, H, I, capital P technology. We have a similar level of scalability. So this brings about, again, cost effectiveness, because nothing goes to waste, unlike the case for first generation VA chips, were quite a big deal of the costs were in effect sunk in terms of materials due to inefficiencies in the panel and the equipment nature of that process for each type of VA chip. With chips, much more scalable, nothing goes to waste. We can rapidly scale up or scale down as need be our engines within these packages to address, you know, power requirements ranging from, you know, less than 100 watts or even less than that, all the way up to several kilowatts in relatively large chips. So it's a technology platform with legs. You know, once again, it's going to take time, but and obviously there's been a lot of time already invested in this. We have a very strong IP foundation for this technology. We have very significant long-term expectations for its contribution to the top and bottom line.
That sounds great. Thanks. Looking forward to the next conference call.
And with that, if there are no other calls, we look forward to talking to you again in a few months. Thanks very much. Have a good night.
Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, that now concludes your conference call for today. You may now disconnect. Thank you for joining, and enjoy the rest of your day.